Friends, it's SummerSlam weekend, which means it is an absolutely great time to be a ProWrestling.net member. Not only do you get all of the podcasts you hear here on the All Access side, but you also get an exclusive SummerSlam review, an exclusive NXT TakeOver review, reviews of Raw and SmackDown after SummerSlam. Oh my God, there are so many podcasts I might explode. Plus, the ProWrestling.net weekly audio show on a weekly basis, where Jason Powell often breaks down first-run news, all the news of the week. It's a great show. All of this is available for ProWrestling.net members, plus ad-free access to the ProWrestling.net website, where you can follow along with some SummerSlam live coverage and all that action. You can get all this for $7.50 a month if you just want to try it out, or if you take the annual option, that knocks the price down about $2 a month to $5.50 a month. Please support us and check out ProWrestling.net membership. This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at Will Pruitt and at Barnett Jake. On today's show, previewing NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 3, the third NXT TakeOver from Brooklyn, plus what we're most excited about at SummerSlam and what's making us happy in professional wrestling this week. So Jake, the weekend of SummerSlam is upon us. Do you feel more summer-ish or slam-ish?
Well, probably summer-ish, because it's like extra summer here this time of year. It's like a bajillion degrees outside, so I am summered out at this point.
Yeah, so you need to add a little bit of slam to your life.
It couldn't hurt at this point, no.
I definitely am feeling more summer-ish. I mean, I will probably end up watching NXT TakeOver while focusing projectors at an outdoor venue before a screening of Jurassic Park where a symphony accompanies it. So that, I don't know that it gets more summerish than that for me. So I'm with you.
Definitely not. No.
Yeah. I don't know why the one weekend I had like gigs this month had to be SummerSlam weekend. It makes me a little bit sad.
You know, I'm sure you'll find a way to fit in all that wrestling you normally do.
Yeah, it turns out I don't have much of a life, so don't have to worry there, everyone.
Yeah, no concerns whatsoever.
So we're here to preview NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 3, and first I gotta ask, how do you feel generally about NXT TakeOver Brooklyn? It's the third year they're doing it. I know personally I'm not, this is the least excited I've been for a TakeOver in a while, and I honestly trust that it's going to be a superior wrestling show. Like, it's going to rule, but I'm not like, oh my God, yes, like I was 2 years ago going into this same show.
Yeah, I mean, NXT, I mean, for a while there, it felt like just an embarrassment of riches in terms of, you know, characters they had built up and fans were just sort of drawn in to how different it was than what we were seeing, you know, on the main roster for such an extended period of time. And then, you know, so much NXT talent has migrated to the main roster that it doesn't feel as different anymore, I guess is a one way to put it. But yeah, for me, it hasn't really captured my imagination like that TakeOver show we saw in Dallas ahead of WrestleMania that last year. So I guess for me, I'm looking forward to this because there's a couple of matches on this show that I think are going to be fantastic. But from a story perspective specifically, there aren't as many characters that I'm just really rooting for this time around.
Yeah, that Dallas show was a borderline religious experience for me. So seeing all of that was amazing. It was definitely the highlight of that weekend, aside from getting to hang out with you and having you watch me and my brother stuff our faces with chicken McNuggets before that show.
And bourbon.
Yeah, that was that car bourbon is the greatest bourbon.
It is great bourbon.
So let's talk about the NXT Championship match first. Bobby Roode versus Drew McIntyre. I just kind of assume this is McIntyre, who is like the greatest lead babyface NXT could want for a this is your show, this is your brand, we love you type of guy. Drew McIntyre is, I think, the best guy in wrestling at that. you put him on top of NXT and you give him a run there. I think that's what they should do. And I think Bobby Roode is kind of a tired act at this point.
Yeah, I mean, other than the entrance, he just hasn't shown a lot of staying power. You know, the people react for what is an excellent entrance theme. And, you know, when they've done extra special musical performances to go along with it, it's even better. But yeah. I just haven't seen the effort, you know, put into his character that I was expecting, you know, for them to really build him into something other than, you know, just Bobby Roode, the guy with the great entrance. I mean, that's really what it's been for his run as NXT champion. And that's not to say I don't appreciate his work, because I do. You know, it's just there hasn't been a great story told with Bobby Roode. And I think, you know, McIntyre has been the closest they've come to giving him an opponent that really feels like, you know, somebody who could take over NXT and move it in the direction, you know, that's a positive one for the overall brand. I don't know what happens to Roode post takeover, but I'm assuming, you know, his run in NXT may be over. He may be moving up. He may, or maybe they'll just hit the reset button with him. I'm not quite sure, but I think we see Drew McIntyre pick up a win here.
I don't know that we see Bobby Roode move up immediately unless they really want to have that glorious entrance on Monday or Tuesday night as a big part of the show. But I definitely don't see Bobby Roode as a main event player on Raw or SmackDown. I think he is beneath that. And I don't say that in a derisive way. I don't think Bobby Roode is a main event guy. I think he's just below. I think he can have moments in it. But Bobby Roode main events are boring. Last Wednesday, I went to an NXT show and Bobby Roode and Roderick Strong had like a festival of headlocks in the main event. And it was probably, I was leaving with a friend of mine who, it was the second wrestling show he's ever been to with me. And he just looked at me and was like, I think the main event was like the worst match of the night. It wasn't bad, but eh.
Yeah, that's kind of what, you know, my takeaway from big time Roode matches has always been. It's like, well, it wasn't bad, but, you know, it wasn't great. You know, you keep waiting for the moments to happen where it kind of reaches, you know, the next level. And he's had a couple matches with, you know, I guess two or three with Nakamura where you were just kind of waiting for that. You know, Nakamura is capable of, you know, damn near anything in the ring, you know, from storytelling to ring work. He's just top notch all the way around. And Roode was kind of an albatross on those matches. He just kind of worked his style and that was the end of the story, you know, and it's unfortunate, but it just seems to be the case with Roode. I can't quite move past, you know, the level he's at. He's never quite unlocked the, you know, the next level stuff, as it were. You know, he's kind of like Triple H, you know, before Triple H really figured it out. It's kind of the way I've always put Bobby Roode.
Like a young Triple H, in about 20 years, we'll be watching Bobby Roode matches and borderline enjoying them.
exactly.
Oh, man. Asuka versus Ember Moon for the NXT Women's Championship. Since Ember Moon has come to the NXT roster, it has seemed like she is the person destined to beat Asuka. They've pushed that as the story. Even when Ember Moon lost their first one-on-one encounter, they had Ember say after, "You're my one, I'm going to be yours," as in, you know, 0-1 or, you know, 20-1 or whatever. And I don't know that I love that. I don't know that I necessarily would take the title off of Asuka, as much as she will do great things on the main roster, if used correctly, which is always an issue in WWE. But I don't know that Ember feels built up enough at this point to do that. Where are you on this one? I'm leaning Ember Moon as my prediction, but I'm not psyched about it, I guess.
I'm leaning Ember Moon just because, I mean, I think Asuka just tipped over 500 days.
Amazing.
As the NXT Women's Champion, yeah, which is an amazing feat. But I just think it's time for her to move on, more so than it's, you know, it really feels like they've built Ember up as this, you know, as this unstoppable, you know, machine. It's just Asuka's ready for something else. And I think Ember is the best candidate in the NXT Women's Division to dethrone her. I mean, she does feel like the one they chose. It's just you know, and injuries got in the way and they weren't able to complete the story at the time. But it's definitely, you know, at a point where Asuka has sort of reached the pinnacle of what she can do in NXT. And I'm hopeful, you know, it's not, there's no guarantees, but I'm hopeful that the people on the main roster will get her and know what to do with her. I mean, I guess it's pretty easy to write for an unstoppable buzzsaw, which is what she's been in NXT, but I don't think she can really be that on the main roster forever. You know, there's going to have to be some depth eventually to her character. But I'm assuming she, you know, Ember wins here and Asuka may end up on SmackDown would be my guess, but that I'm assuming Asuka's one of the call-ups after SummerSlam.
Yeah, I kind of assume the same thing. I could definitely see Asuka on either roster. It's interesting because I think SmackDown is more in need of a dominant either heel or babyface like Asuka could be. And at the same time, I think Raw does a better job with individual characters, where SmackDown loves to lump its women together and just do that. At least on Raw, I feel like Asuka could stand out. So I'm curious to see where she ends up. And I think it's a big test for the creative team on the main roster. They haven't done well with a lot of call-ups. And if Asuka does get called up here, it's going to be big to see how they use her, because Asuka should be a sure thing. She should not be hard to book, like, especially, I mean, the first 2 months of Asuka should be getting the Asuka's going to kill you aura around her. Let her ruin people, eventually leading up to like an Alicia Fox or an Emma or some type like that that isn't that is on the main roster already but isn't important, really can take a quick flash loss to her. But I would put her in squash matches for the first month to 2 months, really.
Yeah, and they'll, you know, they'll be coming out of the, you know, Mae Young Classic, and they'll probably have some, you know, recent signings that they could send to TV tapings to lose those matches if they wanted. But, you know, I don't know where she fits in automatically. I think you're right that SmackDown probably needs a good heel more than Raw does at this point, but you may see Raw spend a little bit more time with it, character development, than they've shown the capacity to do on SmackDown recently. So it's a difficult coin flip. I guess it depends on if there's any creative shakeups post SummerSlam. You know, they may be looking at things like that too. It surely hasn't been a great run for SmackDown creative recently. I mean, going back several months now, it just seems like the thing has fallen apart. So maybe they make other moves other than talent moves. You know, that's always a possibility. I don't know. But there's definitely a need for some rethinking of how they're promoting SmackDown, specifically the women's division, which should be contributing a lot more than it is.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote my entire piece today about how SmackDown is kind of in shambles creatively. I think top to bottom, that roster has a lot of promise and is absolutely failing at delivering on it on almost every level. It's sad. So I'm with you there. Let's move on to the Authors of Pain defending the tag team titles against Sanity. This is the one that I kind of think is a toss-up. I'm not sure where to go on this one. Where are you?
You know, I'm of the belief that Sanity may be another one of those call-ups. So I guess I'm going to pick the Authors of Pain to retain only for that reason. But I'm with you. If everybody in this match ends up staying in NXT, it's a lot more nebulous to me what direction they might go in. I'm assuming it's going to be some kind of screwy finish no matter what happens.
I don't know that I could see a screwy finish. I don't know that they will do like a completely screwy, it's a disqualification and we walk away type of thing. I don't quite understand Sanity still. I don't know what Sanity is there to do other than hang out together and be cool. But I don't see Sanity as that. I guess I don't see a point to them all being together in a group other than wearing distressed vests. I mean, they seem to be about that distressed vest life. Maybe Baron Corbin could lead them. But
there you go.
Yeah.
They join SmackDown and Baron Corbin becomes their ringleader.
I
don't know what Sanity is either. I guess it's an interesting visual gimmick, you know, from that perspective. But I don't think they've done a great job of establishing what makes them specifically dangerous. I mean, of course, they act crazy, but I mean, honestly, there's been so many acts over the years that have done that it just kind of doesn't feel particularly original to me. So, they do. Of course, the Wyatt family was kind of that way and still, and was until they disbanded. It was like, what is this exactly? Is it a cult? Is it, just some crazy guy and his buddies? It's like nobody ever really explained what the Wyatt compound was or what those crazy vignettes were. I think as long as they do something interesting with them, it could work. But I honestly don't know where they go with this feud if all the players are staying on NXT at all. It almost feels like they need more help in the tag divisions up on the main roster.
Yeah, I think they need some depth, especially in the SmackDown tag division, actually. That place needs a couple more acts, so I could see Sanity doing a lot of good there. If anything, just as another piece of a puzzle there. Someone else to feud with.
Well, the New Day. They have Breezango and the Ascension. Usos. New Day and Ascension. That's basically the whole thing. Yeah. The Ascension and Sanity feel kind of redundant at this point. So.
Yeah.
What is that about? Like, how do you differentiate them meaningfully? I don't even know.
I like the idea they... going off on the SmackDown tag division tangent for a second, like Sami Zayn and Ty Dillinger, I think is actually a very fun babyface tag team. I'm not always big on the like, oh, just put a couple random wrestlers together, but that's one that I'm like, oh, that could work. That's something for both of them to do for a little bit, which is good. But
yeah, I mean, I was talking to Jason on .NET Weekly earlier today, as we record this on Thursday evening, and we talked about what might happen with 205 Live after SummerSlam. Like, what does it become? Are there going to be talent cuts or roster moves? And it's like, well, maybe Rich Swann and Cedric Alexander could be a tag on SmackDown. Like they're ready. Like, let's just do something with some of those guys, because I have a feeling that not all of them are going to make the cut with the way the budgets are going in WWE at the moment.
Yeah, which is. It will be pretty sad, because they signed a lot of great wrestlers for 205 Live and have definitely used them poorly. But yeah, I tend to think the Authors of Pain retain. I don't think Sanity is the team you'd want to use to beat the Authors of Pain. They aren't there yet. I still kind of think that's the TM numbers. The former TMDK from NOAH. I think it's those guys who are going to end up being kind of the dethroners of the Authors of Pain if they come back in good enough shape and ready to. Aleister Black versus Hideo Itami. Jake, this highlights an interesting problem to me. This is the second takeover in a row with no Cassius Ohno match. Arguably one of the best wrestlers in the world, the former Chris Hero, is left off of another takeover show, and it illustrates both the depth of talent in NXT, but also kind of a weird use of them with Aleister Black being in this slot instead of him when they've been building up Itami versus Ohno a lot more on TV. And it's almost like we need another match or two on this, because I don't think Black or Ohno should be left off of a takeover show. But I don't. This feels all very strange to me.
Yeah, I don't quite know how to explain that. I mean, I think this is going to be a great match. I think it has the capacity to be a. One of the best matches on the card. It's just will they execute? But I can't give you a great explanation as to why there's no Hero match on this card, and it's kind of puzzling.
And I tend to think this match is won by Aleister Black, who they seem to have really big plans for. I could easily see Aleister Black versus Drew McIntyre being a takeover main event in the fall, or as we get to Royal Rumble time, which just has my heart's all a flutter with the idea of that.
That'd be a great feud. I mean, they're psychologically, it would be an interesting one as well. They both don't really fear anything. They're both ready, for a fight at any given moment. It really does seem like it would be an interesting clash between those two characters, and they're both fantastic, top-notch you know, hands as well. So it's an easy one to look forward to. I don't know if it'll end up being the main event of a takeover. I mean, it sure deserves to be one, but you know, I think McIntyre is set for a good long run, and I'm not sure if I'd want him to beat Aleister Black at this point, but maybe they'd go that route. Maybe they would.
Yeah. I think that could be, I'm just excited about it. That it makes me all happy. And finally, we get to Johnny Gargano versus Andrade Almas. I saw these two have a match that was really fun as the opening match of an NXT house show last week. So I think they will have a fun opener that Gargano ends up winning.
Yeah, I'm expecting this one to be a feel-good conclusion. I mean, I do think that they've managed to redeem the Almas character a little bit with the introduction of Zelina, but you know, there's still a lot of work to be done there. I'm hopeful that they'll finally, you know, get him to the point where he's comfortable in the ring with you know, with the WWE style, and maybe this match will be the beginning of fans starting to recognize the growth that he's undergone as well, because I think he is a bit underappreciated and he's a hell of a talented guy.
Yeah, I think he's a guy who could grow a ton and who they could really use, especially with a baby face on top. He's a guy who could rocket into title contention. And I think his kind of lackadaisical, non-caring heel act against a very passionate and earnest Drew McIntyre could be a very fun program in NXT. They could do a lot of great work with that. I just noted, as far as people missing from the show, it's not just Cassius Ohno, but Roderick Strong, not on the show. Ruby Riott, not on the show. Neither are Peyton Royce or Billy Kay. I think actually one of the weaknesses when you look at the entire body of takeovers, there's usually only one women's match per show, and the women are a big part of the NXT roster, and there's no reason they couldn't build two women's matches on each show or something like that and still even keep it a 5 or 6 match card. But also, there are no matches from the WWE's UK division. I know Pete Dunne is injured currently, but I would think they could put together a number one contenders match or something, especially after you had the WWE UK wrestlers and Dunne and Bate steal the show at NXT TakeOver Chicago.
Yeah, there's quite a few puzzling omissions. I agree. I mean, I'm not sure if they're just, you know, we set out this much time for the show and this is how we timed it out and that's it. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of explanations as to why you would limit a takeover, you know, to this many matches if they wanted. Yeah, I'm assuming, you know, Drew McIntyre and Bobby Roode is going to be a decent length match. And if you're going to dethrone Asuka, it has to be a decent length match. And you don't want to shortchange a Tommy and Aleister Black. I mean, you know, there's plenty of, you know, reasons you could justify not having some of these guys on the show, but it does seem strange, you know, that they wouldn't get involved in some way. I mean, Jason had kind of speculated, you know, and I think you might have been on one of the shows where he speculated this, you know, about that NXT takeover celebration, you know, with maybe former talents that would be getting physically involved in some way with some of the existing ones in a brawl of some sorts. Maybe you see more talent appear there. I don't know. I mean, it just seems far-fetched to me that they would go that route, but it's always a possibility for a little added surprise to the show.
Looking forward to the Nexus reforming 7 years later. I think that could be a really special moment.
Very, very much so. Yeah.
That's Skip Sheffield, by God! It would be insane.
Botch a backpack stunner and it would just feel like old times.
Yeah. Oh my God, is that Michael Tarver with that weird ass mouth thing? Why? No, really, why? Like, why?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Heath Slater's just like, I'm so damn successful, you guys. I don't need this.
Yeah, I got kids. Leave me alone.
Yeah, do not bring me into this. I got kids. What are you most excited about for SummerSlam? We just went through the entire NXT show. SummerSlam, what is like at the top of your list as the thing you're most looking forward to for that show?
I guess it's kind of a layered thing because it involves two matches, but the outcome of the Raw Universal Championship match and the Tag Team Championship match. I'm not, I guess, you know, those matches are going to be fun, but I'm more curious to see if they kind of lean into each other in a way where it becomes sort of obvious that they're heading towards a full Shield reunion. I think it's a possibility. So I guess that's what has me most interested for SummerSlam. I'm curious if this is finally going to come together. You know, we saw Ambrose and Rollins finally put aside their differences on Monday and sort of get their act together. But if Reigns gets involved, it could be a huge, a huge boon for WWE during a time of the year where they, you know, they normally sag both in viewership and creatively. I think it could be the spark the show needs to sort of keep momentum through the fall.
One, I wrote down two things because I was going to say, I figured you'd say one of them, and I was going to say the one you didn't say. You said both things. I'm mad at you.
Well, you could talk about the matches because I kind of blew right through those.
But you give me kind of a thought that what if SummerSlam went off the air with Ambrose, Rollins, and Reigns in the ring together? Like, if SummerSlam went off the air with say Reigns won the main event, and I actually don't think Reigns wins that, but now it's kind of in my head, like, if Roman Reigns won that four-way main event, and Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, who are currently the tag champs, came down to the ring as well, and you saw all three of them kind of doing the Shield thing in the ring, belts up, fists in, that crowd would be going insane. Like, I think there you'd get the boos out for Reigns right up until Ambrose and Rollins jumped into the ring, and then people would start losing their ish. And it would be probably one of the cooler moments in SummerSlam history, definitely one of the more fan-servicey moments of the last decade of WWE, and I think really fun, and now I want that. So it's also your fault that you just made me want that really bad.
Well, I don't think you want to burn through the fuse that quickly and light off the whole thing. I guess in my mind, I was sort of anticipating like, okay, you know, they set up, you know, at some point in the show, you know, the idea that these three are talking to each other again. And I don't think, we're going to see them, get together and interfere in each other's matches or whatever. That would be probably too much too soon. But, you know, if post main event, you get the idea that, okay, you know, the tag champions and say, you know, maybe Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman knock each other out of the main event, and it comes down to Lesnar retaining by pinning Joe again. You know, you might be able to create enough inertia there where it's like, okay, you know, you have Roman Reigns feuding with Braun Strowman. You have, the other two Shield members, former Shield members, who maybe they get cheated out of the tag team championships. You know, they're all disgruntled. You know, it might be an opportunity for them to sort of come together to right their injustices, because their original Shield run was all about, you know, injustice. And so that creatively it makes for an interesting way to go through it.
Yeah, part of me actually would love to see them just burn through it all in a night, because I like instant gratification. But then again, I would have said 3 weeks ago, we're going to get Rollins and Ambrose fist bumping and it's not going to be great. And oh man, has the last couple weeks of Raw been really fun. And I think that's the thing I'm most excited for, is seeing Ambrose and Rollins on the same page in that tag match. They have done such a good job building up to it. They've really paced it perfectly. They've taken you on an actual emotional journey. They've shown characters with, like, their choices mattering, and there being actual real consequences for them. Like, there is a depth to the story that WWE doesn't usually get into, but here they have. And it's been really, really pleasant to watch and to experience, and a fun ride to go on with the two characters that I think that tag match is probably the thing I'm most excited for on that show, even though the main event is going to be insane and hopefully really, really good. I have really high hopes for the main event as well. So I'm with you on both, but I think I give the edge to Ambrose and Rollins. And man, that fist bump on Raw, I have never seen a more over fist bump in my life.
Huge. Yeah, it was big. And you know, they showed a lot of discipline in getting there. They made people want it. And I think that's going to be, you know, a huge part of if they are going to move forward with reuniting the Shield. You know, they have to do the same thing to get it for getting Roman on board, because it, you know, you're going to have a fan base that is going to automatically want to boo that guy regardless of whatever he's doing. And rejoining the Shield is probably one of the few things that might, you know, turn people, you know, into being behind him again, 100%. And so, you know, again, down the road, that's like, well, perfect. You finally got all these three on the same page again. Now it's like, well, which one of them is going to break free? Which one of them is going to be the one that drives the wedge? And I think Roman is a perfect guy to turn heel through that mechanism. And it would just be massive, to be honest with you.
Part of me doesn't believe they'll ever turn Roman heel. I think you can turn Dean heel through that, though, and get another great Ambrose and Rollins feud, and get a really, really great Ambrose and Reigns feud out of it, too, and put Dean on a far better career trajectory than old wacky Lariat Man that he's been for years. Like, he just spins around and throws clotheslines for some reason. Jake, what's making you happy in wrestling this week?
Well, I think it would have to be, you know, the final three nights of the G1.
My God. Yes.
What an excellent close to that tournament, and three, you know, unbelievable matches. So it's hard to pick one, because I think they're different enough and they're good enough that, you know, depending on what kind of affinity you have for each of the talents involved, you could probably, you know, pick which one you enjoyed the most. But I'm going to say, personally, I think the best match of the group was Omega and Okada, but that's all personal preference. I wouldn't, you know, begrudge anybody for picking either of the other two. I thought Tanahashi and Naito was fantastic as well. So I'm all for people who have never seen, you know, New Japan before. Go out of your way and watch just those last three matches of that tournament, and just, you know, see what you've been missing, because it's an amazing, it's, you know, those three matches could be match of the year, you know, in any given year. And it just so happened that they all happened in the same weekend. It's just amazing.
Yeah. My what's making me happy is the exact same thing. The main events of those final three nights, and each one of them had something distinct that stood out about it. With Tanahashi and Naito, I thought it was really unique how it played on what they have done in the past. Like, it played on their prior two singles matches they've had this year. And finally, you know, Naito coming out on top, I thought was really, really well done. And with Omega and Okada, it was a similar thing where they were playing on their matches from earlier this year, obviously. But you saw them start at an absolutely insane pace. They went from 0 to 60 faster than almost any match I've ever seen that isn't instantly ending. Like, it was nuts. And the crowd noise for the final night of the G1, like when the bell rang for Okada versus, or for Omega versus Naito, and you're just like, wow, these people are going nuts. That was amazing.
Yeah.
That was
huge.
So
pop
cool
for Shibata returning as well.
Yeah.
That was a great moment.
That was the
resurrection of Daryl, which will go down as the best moment of the year in New Japan.
Yeah. The seeing Daryl come back was great. Seeing Daryl give that fist bump to Naito after Naito won the whole kit and caboodle, if you will. Cat puns. Yikes. But seeing that was wonderful as well. Really well done. And I think one of the things you see in New Japan that the G1 shows every year, and especially showed this year, is wrestling can tell a lot of different stories. Wrestling can be this roller coaster of emotion and still be kind of straightforward pro wrestling. You don't need to work in all of, I don't want to say sports entertainment-y things, because I'm talking about a stuffed cat fist bumping a wrestler who wears a suit for some reason. Like, sports entertainment AF, you know? But it definitely shows how good wrestling can be the backbone of something. And New Japan just knocked it out of the park with the entire G1. I'm already, like, almost going through withdrawals post-tournament.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy to go back and watch the highlights when they put them. They usually do put together highlight packages once the dust is settled and somebody gets back into the editing booth and puts together everything. You know, from start to finish, they'll probably show a 10 or 15 minute video just highlighting all the great moments in the tournament. And there's not going to be any shortage of them, I guess, from a crazy nitpicky standpoint. Do you think Naito's uses of Destino throughout the tournament were, specifically in those last couple matches, it almost felt like they had worked themselves to the point where they were so tired that it was extremely difficult to execute. they ended up looking a lot sloppier than I recall them looking in previous matches. Maybe it was just me, but it's like, man, I wish he could find a different finisher, because it's almost like it takes you out of the moment when it's clear that he's not doing any of the heavy lifting for his own finisher.
Yeah, it's not my favorite finisher, to be honest. I look past it because, hey, it's good, and who says any wrestling move is actually realistic? Like, it's hard. Suspension of disbelief is there enough where I'm fine with it, but Destino is not my favorite finisher in wrestling, and I don't think it works really well. But on the other hand, I will probably freak out the first time he hits it on Okada in the main event in the Tokyo Dome on January 4th this year.
So, there is that, yeah. Yeah. I guess it's also the same tournament where, you have Omega hitting like 15 V triggers in one match, and it's like,
that's like all he does.
Yeah, it's like that strike is so vicious. It's like, how does it not like kill somebody like the first time he hit it, let alone 12 of them in a row or whatever? It's good. It's nuts. So it's just pro wrestling for you.
Yeah. It's like they know when someone hits L1 to execute that finisher,
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that'll wrap it up for us tonight, Jake. I'll see you on the other side of SummerSlam.
Sounds good, man. Have a good weekend.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. For more, please subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review, show us that you appreciate us, and if you want even more content, check out ProWrestling.net's membership option.